You're listening to the Writing Wall Podcast, and I'm your host, Stacey Hawks. Every second and fourth Saturday of the month, I will be here at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and many other platforms. This podcast is designed for indie authors to have a platform to share their books, their poetry, and their stories. We also feature well-known and traditional writers that are from my home state of North Carolina, while also featuring local writers from my backyard right here in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of Allegheny County. You can connect with us on Twitter at The Writing Wall or on Instagram at WritingsOnTheWall85. And grab our links there to our website so that you can keep up with what's happening with our monthly newsletter. Newsletters go out the first of every month. And you can also sign up to follow us on the Wix app. Because everyone has a story, we want to hear yours. What is your story? Welcome to our Season 6 bonus episode of the Writing Wall Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Hawks, and I'm here with author Damian Linane of Newcastle. He's a Newcastle-based author, artist, and activist who aims to destigmatize prison, promote the need for prison reform, and highlight the lack of rehabilitation services for prison inmates. And he's also the indie author of a book titled Scarred. Damian, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Share with listeners a little about yourself, where you're from or residing, and what genre you write.
Right, so I'm from Sydney, Australia, and I live in Newcastle, as you said, which is, for those of you who don't know Australia very well, it's just a couple hundred kilometres north of Sydney. Yeah, I have a very interesting story, I guess. I've written one book, but one's been published, and that's a crime thriller. My second book is actually a memoir, which is finished now, but I'm kind of on the back burner trying to get it published, because now I'm doing I'm writing a third book right now. I'm doing my PhD, so it's funny, I've written like three big bodies of work, and they're all completely different ones, you know, crime fiction, memoir, and then like academic. So I feel like my life's a little bit all over the shop, to be, and not in a bad way, but yeah, I can't say I have a set writing style. Yeah.
Scarred is your debut novel. Tell listeners about that book.
Yeah, a bit of an interesting story. Where do I start with that? Because there's so many places I could bridge in, but I guess, so there was a lot of trauma in my childhood, and I tried to bury that for 20 years, and then, this is a very condensed version, by the way, and then when I was in my late 20s, that kind of manifested in a very unhealthy way, and for the first time in my life, I found myself in trouble with the law, and I ended up getting 10 months in prison for what the magistrate described as an act of vigilante justice. I went into prison, and again, brief version, there was no programs, no education, no rehabilitation. So I'm like, all right, guess I'll write a novel. I had this like very basic idea in my head for a book for a very long time. And then I took a lot of things that actually happened with my personal life and crime. And then I like exaggerated them like quite dramatically. Like it got to the point where I was like, at first I thought I was going to put like based on a true story on the book's cover, but then it was like it ended up becoming so far removed from the truth that I didn't feel moral doing that. I wrote a crime thriller about a vigilante, and that's about where the similarities a lot of the similarities end, but yeah. So it's a crime thriller. Yeah.
How long did it take for you to write this book, and tell us a little bit about that backstory if you can behind what inspired it?
It took me 5 months to write by hand, and you know, people on the outside, they come like, wow, like, you know, it took me 5 years to write my book, like how did you get it done so quickly? And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of ironic, there was like really nothing else to do inside, so I mean, you know, I it was my escape. You'd be surprised what you can do, what you can accomplish when there's like no distractions at all. So yeah, and that was the funny thing, was like, you know, it took me 5 months to write by hand. Never would have written it if I hadn't gone in there, but if I had about access to a computer, I'm pretty sure I could have done it in three, because yeah, writing by hand is not recommended by Damian, that's for sure. So I went on this path. It's not a secret, I'm happy to talk about it, but I'm like, yeah, so someone very close to me had told me that she was sexually assaulted, and I went to take the law into my own hands. I was planning to go to the home of the man who did that to her to beat the living hell out of him. But long story short, he wasn't home, but I was there and I was angry. And I made the like rash decision to set fire to his house. The whole place burnt down. Nobody was injured. But I guess part of what I was doing with the book, I knew why I was angry with the world. Even when I went to do that, I knew that, like, I don't feel any remorse towards him. He was a pretty horrible human being. But I knew that I was using him as a scapegoat for my childhood trauma. It wasn't about what happened to this person. It was about what happened to me. But I knew how angry I was from my childhood trauma. And I was like, all right, this is how angry I was. Now, what if we take a child and we make him, trauma 10 times worse, and we'll see where that takes him. And instead of, you know, the person not being home, he's there, and like, yes, someone's actually killed. And then I guess I was trying to see how bad things could have gone. And I'm very glad they didn't get to that page, because I just wanted to see the downward spiral of somebody who keeps going along that path. And unlike me, whereas like not long after it happened, I was like, all right, I just burned a house down. I think I need to talk to someone about my trauma. And I booked in with therapy. And then ever since then, my life's, you know, gotten back on track. But I really wanted to follow what would happen to a character who A, starts off in a worse position, and B, never makes that decision and just keeps going down and down and down further into revenge, which I do not recommend at all. Yeah.
What have you found to be the most surprising or interesting aspect of publishing?
I didn't really know much about publishing, because I mean, I've been a prolific reader all my life. In school, I was the kid always getting in trouble for trying to read. Like, I had my book, like, you know, hidden in my lap, and it never worked really well. Teacher was always getting me in trouble. But I didn't have any, like, training as a writer. People say, like, do you have to be a prolific reader to be a writer? I'm like, yes, definitely. But, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing. I just started writing, and I didn't plan the book out at all. It just, it wrote itself. At no point did I know what was going to happen more than a couple of chapters in advance. But because I didn't really know anything about what I was doing, like, I made some mistakes when I went around the publishing route. Like, for example, I didn't know that most publishers, if they reject something once, they'll never look at it again. So I sent kind of my first draft to all the major publishers, you know, and naturally my first draft, you know, I would be so embarrassed if somebody saw that now. And to think I sent it out to people, because I was like, oh, hopefully they'll be interested and they'll pay for all the editing, right? And no, like, you know, you should polish your novel up as much as possible before you start sending it out. And so I kind of like already blacklisted myself with all the major publishers before it was really ready to show. So by the time I had it done really well, I was like literally down to like the last publishers accepting manuscripts. And I ended up getting picked up by a very small independent publisher that's actually based in Seattle, but they have like someone who works for them in Melbourne, Australia. So, I mean, it was a bit... very big learning gap with the publishing process. In fact, I tell people that writing's the easy part. It's getting published is the editing, and then getting published is where the difficulty is. Getting the whole story out is too difficult by comparison, in my experience at least. Yeah.
I like that. Trying to sneak the book in during class, trying to read it while your teacher's teaching. Yes, I have tried this. Yes, I've done it. But things are so much different now, because kids have electronics. They have their iPods, their iPads, their cell phones. And I mean, they can really get by with it now, not like we used to.
Yeah. And I just have like have long hair and have like it in one ear, like an earbud or something, an audiobook or something. Yeah.
So let's talk characters for a moment in Scarred. Which one do you most relate to and why?
The main character is Jason, and he's the vigilante. So, I mean, he's like, people who know me very well, they can see the little bits, like the quirks and idiosyncrasies that I took from myself and put into him. So basically, I had undiagnosed autism as a child growing up. My autism wasn't diagnosed until I was 25. And that was something else I wanted to play with. Like, I'm like, once I was diagnosed, my condition got easier to manage, whereas his is still undiagnosed. So, I mean, I took a lot of things that are like his like autistic quirks, and then I exaggerated them a bit. And like, you know, I'm a minimalist, but you know, I get some of the comments about that sometimes. So I decided to like make him an extreme one. Like, I just took it to the next level. So I guess I was trying to like make a caricature of myself. Yeah. So he's definitely the one I identify with the most in reviews. Like, I actually love reading like Amazon reviews from people. I've got no idea who they are, and they write reviews of my novel. And people tell me consistently, I captured the mind of an autistic person very well, which to be honest, I'm not too surprised about, because it takes one to know one kind of thing. The antagonist in my novel is a man named Howard, and he's also a serial killer. So my book essentially revolves around two independently operating serial killers and the homicide detective who's simultaneously hunting them both. And I guess I'm trying to paint a big theme in the book is childhood trauma, dysfunctional fathers. I could have called my book Daddy's Issues, but it didn't have the same ring to it. The second killer in my book, Howard, he's a little more two-dimensional in the sense that he's more of like, there's a lot of complexity to Jason, but Howard, he's more of a, like the serial killer trope for movies and stuff, but that was deliberate. I needed an antagonist for Jason to work towards. And also, you know, I don't know what it's like to be, you know, that kind of deranged. So, you know, I kind of just had to, you know, kind of make that up as I went along. But I definitely, Jason is a character I identify with a lot. But also, surprisingly, the detective, he's definitely my second favorite character in the book. Just because there's a lot of, I think every major character you write is at least a little bit based on you, and he very much doesn't like his job, and he got into it to impress his father, and there are definitely things I identify with there as well. So I mean, something I tried to do with the novel also was the three main characters, I wanted to point out how they have a lot of similarities and but then a lot of complete differences, but they've all had similar childhoods, and it basically I think I like to explore the different paths that trauma can take people on. Yeah.
You're also an artist. Share with listeners what Vigilante Studios is about.
I wrote this novel. I got a 10-month sentence, and I spent the first 5 months writing the novel. And then it was funny. I came out of my room into the common area in my wing, and one of my friends like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Oh, I finished my novel last night." And he was like, "Isn't that a good thing?" And I'm like, "Yeah, but what am I going to do now?" And I hadn't, like, you know, I wasn't in a place to write a memoir yet, and I didn't have a second idea for a work of fiction. I still don't, to be honest. I was like, "Yeah, what am I going to do?" Because, you know, that was what kept me busy all day. And he's like, "Oh, why don't you, have you ever done any art?" And I said, "Oh, not since, like, you know, since I was a child." And he's like, "Well, why don't you give drawing a go?" There are lots of many things in my life that I've given a go, and I'm like, "Yep, I'm terrible at this." But drawing's the exact opposite. I drew a picture out of a magazine. I just tried to copy it, and he was like, "So I thought you said you'd never drawn before," and I'm like, "I haven't. This is very easy." And I kept practicing every day, and after about 2 or 3 months, I had a queue of people wanting me to draw pictures for them from photos, like pets, their kids, and whatever. And I kept with that after I got out of prison, and I started to focus my art a lot on the criminal justice system. And I had an exhibition here in Newcastle a couple years ago where my theme was people who made the most of their time in prison. And so I drew like Nelson Mandela, Malcolm X. One person I drew in that was a man named Erlon Woods. And if you're familiar with the podcast Ear Hustle, made in California, finalist for the Pulitzer Prize a couple of years ago. And so that was the first podcast made inside a prison. Yeah, so Erlon co-founded that while I was in there, and I drew this picture of him. I tagged him in it on Instagram, as I do, and, you know, I was hoping, I'm like, "Oh, wouldn't it just make my day if he liked and commented? I'm such a big fan." And he did like and comment, and then he also sent me a message, and he said, "Damien, I'm looking for someone. This is really great work. Someone will get in touch." And I thought, oh, maybe somebody in his family wants to order a portrait. And then the next day I got an email from Penguin Random House. And I didn't know this, but Erlon and his co-host Nigel had written a book about Ear Hustle called This Is Ear Hustle, and they were looking for an illustrator. And I tagged the right person at the right time, and I got the contract to illustrate their book. And my artworks for that are currently on display at the San Francisco Public Library.
You've also illustrated a book titled This Is Ear Hustle for a podcast of a similar name. So what is it like being part of this project, and will you illustrate other books in the future?
It was like a kind of like a dream come true, I guess. It was definitely my favorite podcast. A friend put me onto it, and, you know, like I listened to it for like, you know, 3 years, and then all of a sudden I'm part of it. Yeah, I did the intro for an episode a couple months ago, and they actually hired me again to do the cover art for an episode, which was really great. Connect again, and then I actually interviewed them for a project I was working on. Oh, illustrating is obviously I think it was definitely much more valuable use of my time, in the sense it was much more lucrative. That wasn't why I did it, but, you know, like, I did really enjoy illustrating the book, and I can see myself potentially doing something in the future. I've recently been hired for I've had about 6 solo art exhibitions myself, but, you know, I always make the art and arrange it myself, whereas I've just been actually hired for an art exhibition here in Newcastle next year, which is a big step as an artist. I can see myself illustrating in the future. I do think I'm a little bit limited. Like, people come up to me like every now and then, they're like, "Oh, you're an illustrator, right? Can you draw me a dragon?" I'm like, if you give me a reference image to work for, see, like, I taught myself in prison and to draw from photos, and so that's what I'm good at. I don't actually consider myself I can't do like abstract things or, like, you know, create things out off the top of my head. So it is a little bit limited. Like, it was perfect for Ear Hustle because they wanted me to draw from photos. That's what they wanted. Or there were some things where they were just like, I'll draw us like a pair of shoes, any shoes kind of thing. Most of them, they gave me the reference photos. Like, I did actually have someone approach me and they said, "Can you illustrate a children's book?" I'm like, "Oh, look, no, that's just not the style I do. Like, I'm not good at making things up from scratch. I'm very good at attention to detail and seeing and drawing what's in front of me, regardless of whether that's a photo in person." So I mean, I can see myself illustrating the future. But yeah, I'm not a typical children's book illustrator where I can just, you know, stylize things and make them myself. But it's something I would like to do again. Yeah.
We're all familiar with the power that words and art have on us. What do you hope readers take away after having read Scarred or seeing your illustrations in This Is Ear Hustle?
But my target audience was me when I was writing it. I'm like, I want to see what this character can do. Where this goes. I mean, at the end of the day, I think my book's like, it's definitely entertainment, probably what the main thing I was going for. But I did actually want, there were some more subtle themes in there. Like, I wanted people to think about like the different ways trauma can impact people. Like, people can be dealt the same hand of cards. And I like to say, you know, life's 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react to it. And so I did want people to think a bit about how people with a lot in common can make very drastic life decisions, and it's all about how you react to trauma. And I also wanted to paint a picture about the impact your parents can play as role models was something I was trying to hammer home there as well. In terms of art, what I do now, I do two things. I'm doing a PhD in law, and I'm also the editor of an art and writing magazine for people in prison called Paper Chained. You can read it for free online at paperchained.com. And I suppose I like to motivate people to show them what they can do in and when times get tough. For example, I went into prison for 10 months and I turned it in and I came out, a novelist and an illustrator, really. So I get mail from people all the time, in prison for the magazine. They're like, "Well, I never thought I could accomplish something like this. You've motivated me to give it a go." So it doesn't even have to be prison. I did my first ever podcast interview was at the beginning of COVID lockdown, and I was talking about how you need to see this as an opportunity. Yes, this is, COVID impacted all of us. Actually, I was booked to give my first in-person as a author at a bigger festival here called the Newcastle Writers Festival. And 6 days before that was due to go live, we went into lockdown. So I lost my first author opportunity. But I was like, yeah, life's 10% what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. So I think something I try to do with my art is show, what you can accomplish even when times get tough. Because we went into lockdown in COVID and I lost my job. And that's when I wrote my memoir. So I'm like, well, I lost my job, but what can I do now? And when I went into prison, I'm like, well, I actually wanted to study. I wanted to go back to uni. Long story short, you can't do that in the state I'm in, New South Wales. So I wrote a novel instead. I'm like, and then it doesn't really matter what happens to you. You can try and make the most other situation, so people enjoy looking at it. But I think I like the story behind it more. Like, yes, I'd never drawn anything before I went to prison, and then I turned something that most people would see as horrible into a positive experience. Like, I don't look down on my time in prison at all. It was one of the most constructive periods of my life, to be honest. Yeah.
So you mentioned Paper Chains, the newsletter magazine, but you're also a podcaster. So what can you tell us about Broken Chains, and where can our followers listen?
It's actually funny how things connect sometimes. I had that exhibition I was talking about where my theme was people who made the most of their time in prison. And I reached out to the major library around here and I went up, I'm like, this is my idea for an exhibition. Do you think you'd have a space for that? And the programs coordinator at the library was like, I love this idea. How do you feel about also turning into a podcast? And I was like, what? It just completely caught me off guard. And turns out they just built this new podcast studio and they loved the idea of making the most of your time in prison. And so they asked me if I'd be interested in making a prison podcast. And I'm not like, I never turn down new and exciting opportunities. I'm like, I'm just going to give it a go. So I ended up, they had me on for seasons, only 4 episodes a season, but don't ask me why, that's just how they did things. And for all the first 7 episodes, I interviewed somebody who had been to prison about a different topic within the prison system, like, for example, like mental health, education, trying to get a job after release. And then for the last episode, I actually did something different and I interviewed a volunteer in there. But so if you go to my website, damienlenane.com, you can find the links in the podcast section there. It's a little bit tricky to find because for some reason, Newcastle Library, who was running the podcast, instead of giving everyone, they have like half a dozen different podcasts, but instead of giving everyone their own podcast, they release all the podcasts they make as episodes of the library's podcast. So like I'm kind of in there like in between like other people's podcasts on everything from history to knitting and stuff. So if you look at their playlist, it looks a bit random. Newcastle Libraries Reel is the name of the podcast it's on, but you can find it through my website. It's a bit easier. That was a really incredible opportunity. I actually very much liked podcasting. When I started my PhD, that was the first thing that cut, because people don't realize how much effort goes into a podcast. It's not just you hit record and then 30 minutes later you upload. There's a lot of the editing that goes into it afterwards. So fortunately that stopped. But I mean, I'm very passionate about the PhD I'm doing now, and also the job that started this year, making that art and writing magazine, because that's what I needed when I was in prison. It was a creative outlet, and we didn't have anything like that. So that's, I'm doing two things I feel very, very passionate about. I'm really happy, and I'm encouraging other writers as well. Our magazine, we just got a person who's now sending in. He's like, writing a novella, and we're publishing it as a serial, or we're going to start doing it from the next issue, which is really exciting. I love seeing new creative things that come through the magazine.
Podcasting can certainly be a challenge. I don't think anyone realizes the amount of work that goes into it until they start one, although we have a lot of fun too on the podcast for sure.
Yeah. I was actually like listening to Ear Hustle, and when Nigel first told, because Erlon was in prison for so long, and she's like, why don't we do a podcast? And he's like, what's a podcast? And then she brought an episode in and played it to him, and he's like, oh, this is going to be easy. And years later, he's like, oh, yeah, no, it's actually very difficult,
Earlier, you mentioned you were working on another book. Is there anything that you can share with us?
My working title for that is Raw, and it's a memoir. And I start, so I mean, I've had a very interesting life even before the prison thing happened. Fun fact, or not so fun for me, but very interesting. My parents actually met in prison. My father was a serial burglar, and my mother was a prison welfare officer. And that was a horrendous start to a relationship, as I'm sure I don't have to tell most people. So I had a very interesting childhood. And I think my memoir, the main theme is, so I bottled up, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I bottled up like all this trauma from my abusive childhood for 20 years. And then it was released in a very unhealthy way. And I think, I mean, essentially I'm just telling my story because it's interesting. And in fact, the reason why I decided to do that was people kept writing my novel and they're like, tell me how you wrote this. And then I started telling them about it, and they're like, oh, Damien, your novel's interesting, but the story behind it sounds a lot more interesting. You got to write that down. So basically, everyone kept telling me I needed to write a memoir, so that's why I eventually did. But I guess the theme of the memoir is why it's important to come forward and talk about trauma. And I think, like, the hidden message there is that I hope people read my story, and then that motivates at least someone to come and feel like they can talk about the things that might have happened to them as well as part of the healing process. Yeah, that's the theme. You get the story out first, and then you go back and you look at the themes, as as a writer, and then I was like, yeah, this is the strongest theme in there, so then I can kind of bring that out more. But that's a little bit on the back burner at the moment. I actually sent it out to the big five publishers, and two of the big five actually told me they were interested. One of them, after negotiation for a couple of months, they said, oh, look, we just feel like there's too many accusations in here, because I talk about a lot of childhood trauma, and some of those people are still alive, and they're like, they turned it down because they thought there was too many accusations. And then the second one of the big five, they actually were like talking to me about it for a lot longer, for months, and they eventually said, Damien, the market for memoirs died in COVID, and we were really hoping it'd pick up, but it hasn't yet. For now, we're just gonna have to say no to this. And the big five don't tell you that to make you happy, feign interest. So it was that was a little bit of a downer that I came very close to a major contract, but then I've started the PhD now, so I think it's a little bit on the back burner. And also, my story is still evolving. I actually got approached by a filmmaker not long ago who wants to do a documentary on my life, and she actually said to me, she's like, I think your memoir might actually be a lot more exciting, like after if you released it after the PhD was done, because you've gone from prison to maybe lecturing at a university. And so that's part of the reason I've kind of put it on the back burner, is I came very close to getting a contract. I feel like the story is only gonna get more interesting in the next few years, so I've kind of just, at the moment, I send it out to a publisher every now and then, and if I get a hit, I'll take it. Otherwise it's just taking a back seat to the PhD at the moment, I guess.
When I first saw Scarred, and when it first came across our Instagram and it was brought to my attention, my first thought was, this story needs to be on the screen. Somebody really needs to tell this in a movie format or a TV series or documentary format.
It's actually really funny. So Scarred, it was shortlisted for a competition, and everyone who was shortlisted for that competition, run by the Queensland Writers Centre, got a day where they could pitch their book to film producers to have it adapted into a TV show or a film. And so they gave us the dossier at the beginning of that day of like all the directors who wanted to meet with us. And I was reading through them, and one of them just like there was, I was reading her profile, and all she made was documentaries. And when it came to her time to meet with me, I said to her, I'm like, look, I'm not sure if we've been matched by accident. I don't think you'll be interested in in my novel, you make documentaries. And she's like, oh, I'm not interested in your novel. I read the backstory about your novel. I'm interested in doing a film project on you. A couple of people, film producers, told me they were interested in my book, but like nothing is set in stone. One said, like, you know, I would definitely like follow it up in a few months. But it was funny. I went to that festival hoping to get a contract to make my novel into a movie. And then I ended up getting a contract to make myself into a movie instead, which I was very happy with. But I was just like, yep, this is my life. You know, I don't plan these things. They just happen. Yeah.
What advice would you like to share or give to someone who is thinking about publishing?
Probably, you know, reading between the lines of what I said earlier is like definitely make sure it's in a good position before you send it out to publishers. The best money I ever spent on my novel was only a few hundred dollars, was like a professional manuscript assessment. And, you know, and that was actually like, I couldn't really put a price on that. Because something, when I first wrote the first draft of my novel, I wrote the whole, like I started from wrote the whole backstory of the character at first and then transitioned into his life as that adult. And the best advice I got was this guy's like, no. This is really bad. You need to either shift the start earlier or present his childhood as a series of flashbacks. You're dumping too much information on us at once. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. So, but there was a lot of other things as well. So my first advice would be to polish it up as much as you can. Give it to several people to proofread. Something I've found, I keep finding, is that no matter who you give it to, you know, so everybody finds a different typo somewhere. You know, I gave it to two people to read like the week before I published, and both of them found like three typos. But the funny thing was they both found three completely different typos that the other person didn't find those three. So, you know, I gave the same copy to two people and they each found different things. And then I was like, oh, well, now I have to proofread this again myself. But yeah.
Exactly. The books are not going to be perfect. You can do your very best. There's always going to be something you missed or something your beta readers missed or your editor missed. And you're not going to see it till later on. And you're going to be like, oh, darn. And at the same time, you just can't sit and edit and edit and edit, because as authors, we have a tendency to get to where we just want to do nothing but edit, and we eventually edit the story to it's almost unrecognizable. You can do that. You can edit too much.
Oh, yeah, that's advice for people. So, I mean, definitely, like, the more, yeah, don't be lazy and just say, oh, you know, well the publisher will edit this. No, edit yourself. But also, it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be finished, per se. You're just going to reach a point where it's as good, like, investing any more time in it isn't going to be worth it, you know, diminishing returns. So, I mean, I don't think it's ever going to be perfect. And you just accept, you know, you've just got to pick a line, draw a line in the sand where you're like, look, this is very good now, and I need to move on to something else. Because you don't want it sitting in your drawer for 6 years. I'm still mad at Patrick Rothfuss. You know, he's had his, like, you know, the third book of the King Killer Chronicle, like, it's been finished for years, and he's just a perfectionist. And I'm like, dude, I don't care, just release the book, you know.
So Damien, how can listeners follow you and find your books, your podcasts, and your art?
My personal Instagram is at Damien Lanane, and my art Instagram is at Embers of Retribution. You can link to both through there in the bio. And my website's DamienLanane.com. I'd say that's the best place is just either Instagram or on the website to follow my story. And I'll post all the updates about what's happening, like if this movie goes ahead and stuff. But yeah, you can find all the updates from there.
Damien, thank you again so much for being part of our season 6 and for being our bonus author. It has been a pleasure speaking with you and learning more about your story and Scarred.
No, thank you. No, I really love, you know, talking about my story. I used to be such a recluse, and now it actually feels kind of liberating to talk. I think I'm making up for all the talking I didn't do in the first half of my life. So I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been really fun to be here.
We encourage all of our followers to check out this season 6 bonus author Damien Lanane on Instagram and find all of his links to his podcast, his art, and his book, Scarred. You can also find Damien's bonus extra on our Buy Me a Coffee platform. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/thewritingwall. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters out there for your support this season. We hope you have a wonderful summer. Because everyone has a story, the Writing Wall podcast wants to hear yours. What is your story? Raw, precise, unbiased. That's our friends at Scribblesworth Book Reviews. Scribblesworth is not only a safe haven for writers where they can get free tools, knowledge, and resources to help themselves, but also a place to help each of their clients to reach more readers with less and less effort over time. Check out their book reviews, e-magazine, awards, articles, and more. Just visit scribblesworth.wordpress.com or follow Julio Carlos on Twitter at @Julio_reviews. Because we all have a story, Scribblesworth Book Reviews wants to read yours, and the Writing Wall Podcast wants to share it. What is your story? Anytime I purchase a book, I always review, and if I really enjoy reading your work, rest assured it may be shared here on this podcast with my listeners and followers. Of course, I will do so with permission from the author or authors first. Please like, follow, and share this information with other writers, and if you ever need a writer's lift, visit me on social media. Thank you all again for being here for this podcast. I look forward to hearing from you and learning more about the stories you weave.